is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. How's your week going, Rick?
It's interesting. A lot going on. I'm trying to get a little R&R next week, so I'm tying up a lot of loose ends. It seems like we're kind of starting to shift into fall. And, you know, I had these big gaps in my calendar in the fall, and they're starting to fill in.
Gaps?
Gaps.
What do gaps in a calendar look like?
Just blank spaces, but they're filling in fast. So
well,
that's how are you? I understand. You want to give you a tribute to one of our fellow UPF authors.
Yeah, I do. I'm overall okay. I'm a little sad. A friend of mine, who I actually went to high school with, and he was my Florida Foodways professor when I was in the Florida Studies program. And then we simply just became colleagues and friends. He died suddenly last week, and Andy Hughes, and he wrote this wonderful book about the Cuban sandwich, and we'll put a link in the show notes. He was a big food guy, and his death leaves this big empty space in the food sphere of Florida. He was actually, we were trying to hammer out a date to have him on the podcast. And since he can't be on the podcast, I'm going to tell my very favorite Andy Hughes story. Way back in, I think, 2007 or 2008, I was a brand new graduate student at the University of South Florida. I was in my early to mid-30s. I don't remember exactly how old I was. And first semester, I had three classes. One of them was this Florida food waste class, and I was really excited about it. And I go in the class, and there's this guy who, at the time, I thought, well, he's younger than me. And I come to find out by like maybe a couple of months, he's teaching the class, and it's Andy. And I noticed throughout the class that he's like looking at me. And of course, I am young and filled with myself. And I'm like, oh, he's looking at me. I still got it, man. I might be in my 30s, but look at me. I got the professor looking at me. And, you know, he was a good looking guy. And so after class on the way out, he goes, hey, you're Kathy Silustri, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, we went to high school together. And I'm like, wow, he remembers me. I don't remember him. I've got it going on. I am so hot. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I don't remember you. And he's like, well, you might remember my brother, Tim. And his brother, Tim, had dated a friend of mine. I'm like, yeah, I remember Tim. How's he doing? Oh, he's doing great. And he's like, so yeah, we went to high school together. And I don't know how he said it, but he just looked at me, goes, you dumped itching powder down my back.
Yeah.
And I kind of stopped, and I you know, because again, professor, first semester of grad school, first night, this is not an auspicious beginning. And I have no memory of this, Rick, no memory whatsoever. And I just kind of stammer and say, I really don't think I did. I don't remember that. It doesn't sound like something I would have done. And he looks at me and he goes, oh, it was you. I've had a lot of years to think about it. And I'm like, oh, shit, man. I am so, so not going to pass this class. But I did pass the class. It was actually a pretty tough class. He was an excellent instructor. I learned so much from him. And despite my itching powder debacle, we did go on to become good friends, and we'd touch base every now and then. You know, he lived across the bridge in Tampa, which he may as well have lived in Minnesota, I think.
Yeah.
I'll road trip anywhere, but please God, don't make me go through Tampa. And, you know, when I, you know, he's just a good guy and so talented. And I want to share that story with as many people as possible, because it's such a funny story. And I apparently did do this. I went home and called my friend who had dated Andy's brother. And I asked her, she's like, Kathy, I don't remember that, but that sounds like absolutely something you would have done. And I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. So we moved past it, thankfully. And I just, you know, if you're listening to this and you want to just remember a great Florida food historian, you can go buy any of Andy's books. It's Cuban sandwich, I believe. Let me grab it because it's right here.
And did he write one about the Columbia as well?
Yes, he wrote A History of the Columbia Restaurant. He wrote The Cuban Sandwich, A History in Layers. And next year he has a book coming out about the Tampa Theater, which is this beautiful old theater with wonderful Rococo architecture, a possibly haunted bathroom. And as I understand it, they finally got new seats because their seats were so bad for so many years, it was legendary. So, go buy one of Andy's books, raise a glass to him, get yourself a Cuban sandwich. Thanks for being part of Florida, Andy.
And I just have to tell my Tampa history. Sorry, Tampa theater story. I once took a can-can dancer there to see Cats.
Were you dating the can-can dancer?
Dating. We went out a couple of times. She looked like
Oh.
Meg Ryan when Meg Ryan was the thing, and
Ooh.
she was very cute. But that was about as far as it went. Cats.
Well, maybe because it was cats. I mean, oof, that's hard for you. Yeah, I love Nightmare or Tampa Theater because they used to do a whole series of Nightmare on Elm Street during Halloween. And hey, we're coming up on that time again. Let me see what they have going on because that is one reason to go to Tampa. Anyway.
Anyway.
Anyway, we have a guest. Shocking,
Yes.
because we never have those. She's being very patient. Her name is Aubrey Nolan, and she is the person behind the Instagram account, Florida Folk. Florida, I'm sorry, Aubrey, give me the real name of your Instagram account, and we'll get it right in the
Florida
show
Folk History. Florida Folk History.
Florida Folk History.
And how many followers do you have at this point?
I think we're coming up on 54,000.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing. And you've been at it since 2018, right?
Yeah, we've been at it for a while.
Congrats.
Thank you.
When you say we, who is we?
I mean, it's a community, so I run the account, but I always say I'm nothing without my audience. So it's my audience, you know, like it's so much about the conversations and the memories and sometimes even the arguments we have, you know, but it's all for the love of Florida. So we grow together. It's a community. It's a
Cool.
family.
And you say you're from the Redland area?
Yeah.
So I drive past Redland every time I go to the Keys, and you had a post recently going into the Keys that the Don Bailey carpets post.
Oh, yeah.
Because until it burned down, every time I went to the Keys, I would stop at the Key Lime Pie store, which was not the name of it. It's gone now. It burned down. I think they're trying to rebuild, but I would know we were at the store when I saw the Don Bailey carpets billboard.
Yeah,
And it, he is, I'm sorry, what?
he's so sexy.
He is. I love what you wrote, and I'm going to just quote what you said. Don Bailey, carpet mogul, billboard legend, South Florida sex symbol. Don't fight it.
Don't fight it.
Don't fight it.
It reminds me of when Burt years ago when Burt Reynolds was in Playgirl. It reminds me of that, and I remember because I've stopped to take pictures of that billboard too. It's just so cheesy and campy and wonderful. I think it's probably up there with the copper tone billboard as one of Florida's most famous billboards, I think.
Absolutely.
It
Absolutely.
is a fantastic billboard, and I believe what they have now is one that is like generations.
Yes, I love
So,
that
have you ever bought carpet or flooring from Don Bailey?
one. No, I haven't. I haven't, but he would
See,
be
so
the
it's
guy I
not that
go to.
effective. Yeah.
I always thought, it's so cheesy and campy that it's almost like a piece of art. It's like,
It
is this a real place? Is this like, how did you settle on that to be your campaign for carpet? I mean, I guess
You'd
it
be glad
worked.
they did, Rick.
I know.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite Florida billboards, and I don't say that lightly.
So I gotta ask Aubrey. So you're an artist too. Have you ever thought about immortalizing that billboard in with a piece of artwork?
I should put it on a t-shirt.
You should. You
Yeah.
definitely should. We
Yeah.
talk about t-shirts that we should do all the time, pretty much every show.
Yeah. They're fun. I love making t-shirts.
So are you in Levy County now? Are you near Cedar Key?
Yes, I'm about 45 minutes from Cedar Key.
I love Cedar Key. How is it doing after the last storm season? I know it got hurt pretty bad.
It's pretty devastated. And then Dock Street also caught on fire. So it was like a double whammy. And I think they're just going to tear Dock Street down. I don't know if they're going to replace it.
So I was out there a few months ago, and I want to just say, you can still buy clams. One of the clam places. They're hurting. They need you to come buy the clams. Just don't go thinking you're going to have a wonderful tourist experience. But it was very shocking to see. And the saddest part to me when I went to Cedar Key, Aubrey, is I have this picture I took, and I think everybody who's been to Cedar Key took it, of the building that was out over the water that was just falling apart board by board.
Right.
And it's gone now. It's just completely gone.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, that's kind of like the price to pay and the peril of living in Florida. You know, if you want to live on the coast, it's a risk you take. So there's a lot of talk about, like, you know, Cedar Key going forward, how do we preserve it and protect it? Because it is so prone to hurricane damage, and there is so much historic buildings out there. Like, we want to protect them as best we can. So it's
not the first time.
No.
I mean, there was a hurricane that actually parked itself over Cedar Key.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly not the first time the town has been devastated, and it sadly will not be the last. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, it's not going to be the last, but it's, you know, it's a resilient person who lives in Cedar Key, I think.
Oh, for sure.
You have to be.
So what else is there in Levy County besides Cedar Key? Rosewood, I guess, is in Levy County.
Interesting, because like that history is so covered up, and you know, there's still a lot of tension out there. And people don't like talking about it. And I don't know how extreme things are. Like, I've heard rumors about people getting chased off, you know, when they try to replace the signs. I've heard that the signs get shot up and stuff sometimes. So it's just a lot of tension still. I've had a librarian from Sumner say that they have to keep newspaper articles about it under lock and key, because people's grandparents and great grandparents are in the newspapers bragging about what they did, and people want to take those home and destroy them and stuff. And it's not that people want to have evidence against families or anything, but that's history that needs to be preserved, even though it's ugly history. So Rosewood's a very interesting place, and yeah, you have to go through Rosewood to get to Cedar Key. So it's kind of like, I always feel a little weird. Like, I go to Cedar Key to have fun, but you have to pass through this place. And I always try and pay respects when I do, because it is such a dark and tragic story. And I wish that more people knew about it. I don't generally do reposts, but I think that's one that I might end up doing a repost, because when I did write about it, I had to write about it in 3 posts because it was so much information. So I'll have to figure out a way to condense it too. But it's just, there's so much hidden history in Florida that is good, bad, ugly. And it's amazing to me. I learn something new every day. So yeah, I have so much fun running this account and connecting with people and sharing memories and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the Rosewood sign does get shot. I've never seen the historic sign without bullet holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Cedar Key History Museum 12 years ago. So I have to say it was that long ago, because I'm hopeful that things have changed. And I wanted more information. And I think I was working on Backroads of Paradise at the time. And I went in, and there was an older gentleman, white. And I asked him, what information do you have on Cedar Key? And you could tell the look that came over his face. He was angry. And he says, nothing you haven't read online. And I said, well, I mean, so you're telling me, I said, I've only seen a handful of things online. And he went into this tirade about, it was sensationalized in the media, and it wasn't that big of a deal. And those people left of their own accord. And I remember vividly, I just stared at him. I said, yeah, mass murder will make someone do that. And I just walked away because I was horrified. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. Wow.
Well, yeah, I don't have a reputation for not speaking.
I will say this, that the numbers do get sensationalized. And, you know, I live near Ocoee, and the numbers that they say, you know, people who died there, there's just the historical evidence doesn't back it up. I mean, it's a horrible thing, and people definitely died, but it wasn't, you know, what a lot of people claim. And that's the danger of that. You know, we have to, as historians, try to be as accurate as possible.
Right.
But the stories need to be revealed. And that's why Kathy started this Facebook page called Submerged Stories or Submerged History.
Yeah, Submerged History or Submerged Story. If we're going to talk about it and tell people to go there, I should get it right. I swear to God, I am becoming a scatterbrained historian the older I get.
Well,
I'm not that old.
I was trying to remember the name of the book about Rosewood that I love so much. I loaned it. That's why I don't have it.
Islands of Cedar. I was going to mention, Aubrey, have you read Islands of Cedars?
And I'll have to add that to my list.
I have to totally recommend it. It's readable and enjoyable for such a dark subject.
Shanna Smith, she's been on the podcast, right, Rick?
Yeah. Shanna Banana.
We'll link to that episode. Shanna Smith, she wrote this book called Islands of Cedars, and it is a wonderful fictionalized retelling of the present day, but it gets a little spiritual and it goes back, and there's essentially it opens with this man who was murdered at Rosewood, whose spirit is stuck in this tree. And it fast forwards to present day to where one of his descendants, a young black man, comes into contact with a white man who's one of his older relatives participated in the massacre. And it is just absolutely a beautifully written book. And it the history is spot on. I mean, you know, she even goes into Amata Loye, who is a people caller, Polly Parker. And you know, Shanna's one of her exes is Peter Gallagher, who is very, very, I don't want to say enmeshed, but he was very intimate with several tribal members, and he gets the history right. So she gets the Seminole history right. And then she goes into the Rosewood thing, but it's all fiction, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. I can't recommend it highly enough.
And there's another part. There's like little sidebars about some of the natural history. So
my mom skipped that over in the book. She's like, I skipped over all the nature stuff. I figured if I needed to know it, you would tell me.
I loved it because, you know, it's like cleansing your palate almost, you know, like you'd get there and it'd be.
You need a sorbet.
Yeah. It's right? Like a thing about horseshoe crabs kind of in the middle of the narrative. And it, you know, I think you'd have a hard time getting that through UPF to do something like that. But in this book, it was great. Shows kind of the freedom you have if you self-publish. So the Native American thing you were talking about, Aubrey, didn't you just create some kind of book about Native Americans in Florida?
Yeah, I wrote a small book about pre-Columbian Native American art.
That's really, really cool. So how did you create it? Did you just self-publish it and you're selling it on your website?
I went through a local publisher in Gainesville, and I designed everything myself. And it's not really a history book. Like there's books if you want to deep dive and get really rich information, dense information on the artifacts. But for me as an artist, I just kind of wanted people to sit and contemplate the art and connect with it just on a visual level. So it's in my book, I say it's not really a history book. It's more of a listening and just a meditation on art and seeing like there's so many motifs and symbols that were important to these people back then that are still important to us today, like panthers, alligators, dolphins, woodpeckers, all kinds of stuff, and just really beautiful art. And I hope it inspires people to learn a little bit more about the people that were originally here.
Very cool.
And where can people find this book?
I have to reprint it. So I'm a one-woman show, and everything is pretty costly. So That's why I'm very happy I have friends helping me look into nonprofit and everything right now, because everything right now comes out of my own pocket. So I hope to be restocking soon, and restocking stickers and getting into prints and everything, because I have a lot of merch and everything in demand, but it's just investing in inventory is kind of the tough spot. So hopefully, though, especially now with getting into like nonprofit and everything, we'll be able to invest, like, at least my research and everything will be coming out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And it'll be able to free up some money to do better stuff. And I want to start getting into YouTube, too. That's my next foray.
We all do.
Yeah, we've talked
about
that.
We've talked about getting the podcast on YouTube, and it just seems like I just have to figure out the visuals. And it's, for me, it's an issue of time and resources more than anything.
True that.
So resources. Tell me about Redlands, because I have been to Redlands. I've been through Redlands a bunch. I was at Redlands once with a rescue group called Suncoast Animal League that went down there because people dump their animals in Redlands.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
I posted about that a long time ago. It's really notorious. Like, growing up, we never had purebred dogs. Like, we never bought a dog because you just find a dog. Like, I didn't even realize people bought dogs because people just, like, you just pick up a dog on the side of the road or a cat. And yeah, it's really bad, not just with the domestic animals, but the exotic animals too. The pet trade is really big in South Florida, and people buy animals that they eventually can't house or don't want anymore, and release them. And, you know, it's South Florida's subtropical, so it's perfect environment for things like tegus, agamas, iguanas, chameleons, pythons, all kinds of things.
Wait, we have pythons in Florida?
Yeah. Oh, you don't know about the python?
No, she's pulling your leg.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I was like, oh. They're only eating the Glade.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something we talk about frequently. And so why do people dump that? Do they think it's just kind of out in the woods and they'll be okay on their own or something?
Yeah, exactly. They just sort of leave it up to God, and they don't realize they're not just going to live out their little lives, die, and have no effect on the environment. They find other ones, they breed, and there's no predators for them, really. So they just... It's a perfect environment for them to just go crazy. So it's kind of a wild place. Like, to grow up there, everything is like, it's got that small town Americana feel in a way, but at the same time, you also feel like you're in another country because it's tropical fruits, all these exotic animals everywhere. Like, for me, it was normal. People had monkeys as pets growing up, peacocks, like all kinds of stuff. I grew up next to Tiger Dave, this guy that owns a bunch of tigers. Freaking
sure.
Wild.
Why not?
Yeah, like, that was normal to me.
So just this week, my friend said and I'm in Orlando, saw one of these agamas. Is that how you say it?
Agamas, yeah.
Peter's Rock Agama up here in Central Florida.
That's unbelievable.
They're native to West Africa, so they're coming up here. I'm always nervous that someday, you know, there's the pythons and the iguanas and all those things you have in South Florida are going to make their way to Central Florida, because everything seems to be moving north, like, you know, trees and all that stuff that used to be just in the subtropical areas are getting further and further north.
The one saving grace that we have is the cold, because those animals don't like the cold. So as long as they don't become adaptive to the cold, at least they won't go too far north, probably past Orlando. Because, like, even where I'm at in Levy County, it gets way too cold. Like, it freezes
now.
So those reptiles can survive it.
Yeah, now. Kathy keeps saying now because it's getting warmer.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to having crocodiles in Pinellas County before I die, and possibly coral reefs in Charlotte County.
Right.
I mean, it's a migration, I guess. And that is the thing about life. If you want to go back to Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
So I'm curious to know what Was there a culture shock going? So would you consider Levy County Central Florida or North Florida or somewhere in between?
North Central Florida.
So was there a culture shock going from South Florida to North Central Florida?
Big time. I mean, I was kind of prepared for it because my family is from Stark. And my grandmother has had this property that I live on now. I live on her hay farm. She's had this since the 70s, and we come up here. You know, we'd also go to Lake City for family reunions. So I was kind of, you know, I had my toes dipped in rural Florida, but I grew up in Redland, which is its own culture. And then I also, you know, spent a lot of time of my formative years in Miami proper. So I was very used to Miami living and Miami culture. And coming to, like, I was at my breaking point, though, with Miami. Like, I love that city, and she's always going to be my crazy mistress. But like, I was literally 2-3 hours sometimes in traffic crying and thinking of where I live now, and like, I gotta get out of here. It's just unsustainable. But Redland is beautiful. It's just, that's also changing so much, and you know, people are trying to fight to protect it, but they're up against a lot of money and politicians that are in the pockets of developers. So that's probably the biggest thing. Like, when I talk to people on my page and like get the pulse of what people are really frustrated with, is just the rampant development.
Yeah. Well, we keep electing people who, you know, aren't going to do anything about it again and again and again. It's frustrating. Go ahead, Kathy.
No, I mean, it's going to just keep happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. Yeah, you know what? You don't want to know.
it's just
depressing to me, because I wish we would learn our lessons. And not only do we keep developing, we seem incapable of doing any sort of sustainable development.
Like, right.
You know, I understand people apparently are not going to stop reproducing. I was looking for a kid-friendly word, thinking of our two underage listeners that we know of. People are not going to stop reproducing, or at least practicing. And so we need a place to put them. People want to live in paradise. I'm a big fan of the impact tax, the impact fee that we used to have that got repealed, where if you wanted to register an out-of-state car in Florida, it was, what, $275? You know, let's make paradise have a price instead of making paradise pay the price.
Right. It's just not fair to Floridians who have been here for generations, and this should be our birthright, I feel. And we're being priced out of it and pushed out of it. And it's really sad. But in the spirit of optimism, I feel like Floridians are fed up with it and are starting to push back and are seeing that, like, that's what I get from my page. Is people across the aisles are so ready to fight back. And I think they just need the right vehicle. We need the right person to rally behind. We just haven't found that guy yet, or girl. We're waiting on it. I have some people that, like, I'm in their ear trying to get them to run.
They have to want to run.
Yeah, I mean,
they do. They just have some obligations they have to take care of first. I can't listen. I'm way, like, I don't know if you watch Dune, but I'm like the Bene Gesserit of Florida. Like, I'm in politicians' ears. I'm in people's ears all the time. Like, I want to see change happen, and like, I think change is happening, and we're on the verge of a Florida reclamation movement. It just is going to take a lot of brave people coming forward, and it's going to take grassroots movements. But that's what I love about studying history, is I know that's possible, you know, and I feel it. Like, I feel that when my history posts always are going to do well, but my opinion posts skyrocket. People are so, like, they feel it.
I hope you're right, honestly.
I mean, yeah, it's one thing for people to like a post, and then it's another thing for them to vote for something that they perceive as being against their own best interests. I mean, it's...
Sure. But it all starts with giving people giving people that taste of like, you can fight back, you can say no, you know, and teaching people how to do that, and teaching people like, no, you don't have you. For me anyways, like I was very nervous about getting political on my platform, but I was like, at the same time, history and politics are inextricably intertwined. And there's moments where you kind of have to take a stand. And for me, I'm like, you have to put these two political parties aside for a moment. And I know like the responsibility is definitely not 50-50. I'm not saying, you know, it's both sided issue, but whether you're on the right or the left, there's bigger fish to fry right now. And whether you're on the right or the left, the people that we're electing are not protecting and serving the people and the environment. So it's going to take the people fighting back and putting politicians in their place. And I think that's possible. And I just think it's time for Floridians to really take a stand. And, you know, if we it's going to take two sides of the two wings to fly, you know, both parties are going to have to come together to fight against the bigger issue here, which is corruption and greed, all this kind of stuff. But I have a lot of faith. I have a lot of faith because I can feel the energy, you know.
I hope
you're
right. Well, Kathy and I are a little older, and we've taken a lot of punches in this state trying to fight the good fight, and sometimes it's demoralizing. But it's great to hear from someone younger that has hope.
Well,
you know,
look at
right.
Alligator Alcatraz. Everybody told us we couldn't do it. Everybody. And I laid it down on the line. I was ready to lose everything because with my ties with the Seminole and Miccosukee people. And everybody told us we couldn't do it. And look, we're getting that shit shut down, you know? So I have tremendous faith in people power.
I hope they do actually shut it down. There was
I hope
a,
it stays
ruling.
Shut down. Yeah, it was
yeah.
one ruling. And I feel like we're just shitting on you. And I don't mean to.
No. This is great. This is nice breath of fresh air. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, what can we do? And I think it was when Margaret Spontak was on our show, we talked about, you know, take some kids out in the woods. You know, that's the best thing you can do to have them create connections between themselves and natural yeah. Florida is the best thing you can do. So it is sometimes, you know, right in the middle, right now, where I sit in Central Florida, you know, the big thing is painting rainbow crosswalks, because it's like that stupid Cracker Barrel thing. It's so stupid. It's so unimportant in the grand scheme of everything we have going against us.
Right.
So, you know, they're painting over all our crosswalks. And, you know, so people went out there by pulse and did it with chalk again. And so they're going in getting rid of the chalk rainbow every single day.
They got what they have police officers posted there, right?
Yeah, they have police officers. And it's like, come on, we have big fish to fry in Florida.
Exactly.
Nobody cares about the rainbow crosswalks.
I mean, we have several murals here that are going to be painted over, and the city of St. Petersburg sent a letter to the state and said, look, you know, there's a lot of safety data on when you have murals on the street or in crosswalks, it actually reduces traffic fatalities of pedestrians. And so they have, of course, a pride, a rainbow mural. It's not just the crosswalks, it's a whole intersection. And then we have one street in one of the historically Black areas that says Black History Matters. And the state said, no, we're painting over those. And if you don't let us, or if you fight us, we're going to pull your federal funding. So it's a little disturbing. It's a lot disturbing. Also, yeah. We apparently deported two longtime nuns from one of the Catholic churches here this week. So, because nuns are a huge threat to democracy.
So anyways, our perspective is a little different. So it's very refreshing to hear from you. The hopefulness, because we need that. And, you know, tell me where I can go to hold a sign or something to try and you know, stem the tide of what's going on in Florida right now, because, you know, it's just so frustrating.
It is. But you have to think of, there's so many people. That's why I love studying history, is there's so many people who did stand against the odds and were able to make changes. And, you know, I think of the three Marjories. I think of even people like Osceola, who maybe he died, you know, and people could say he died in vain, but did he really? No, like he gave it all. He was willing to fight for what he believed in, and that was for Florida. So that's why, you know, I looked to him. That's why I put him on the protest posters for Alligator Alcatraz, because I was like, that's how I live my life. You know, I want to live and die for Florida. And, you know, I'm willing to lay it all on the line every day and create a Florida that the next generation and the next generation and the next generation can enjoy. You know, it's sad to me that so much of even what I grew up, and I'm not that old, you know, what I grew up loving is gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So, want to keep on going to the politics, or we want to change it up?
Listen, I'm game for anything. I'm game for anything.
Well, I'm curious about Aubrey's art, because you know, I'm an artist too. And so is the stuff on your face, your Instagram thing, is that watercolor or like, what do you
work in? It's actually all digital.
It's all digital.
Yeah. I mimic watercolor, but it's all digital.
That's really interesting, because the tools I've started, you know, playing around with AI a little bit, and the tools that are out there are so advanced. So do you have a background in, you know, non-digital art, or is it that? And so you're just choosing to use.
My background is in traditional art. I did portrait art for many, many years. That's actually how I got involved with the Seminole Miccosukee tribe, is I used to do portrait art for them. And then I switched to digital just because it just makes life easier. The undo button is a saving grace.
Yeah.
And, you know, just being able to have everything on my iPad, like, because I used to paint on wood. So you can imagine, like, my studio was just so cluttered with huge pieces of wood or whatever. And being able to print things too, I just email my designs over to my t-shirt printers or whatever, my sticker printers. So I mostly just made the switch to digital for productivity, but I still do traditional art on the side. And I love it. That's my second passion after writing.
So how did you get involved with the tribes in South Florida? Because I know that's something you and Kathy have in common. She's worked with them as well.
Honestly, through skateboarding, the skateboarding scene. I'm friends with Montana Cypress, who became a filmmaker, actor. And through Montana, I became friends with his brother, Talbert, who's the chairman of the Miccosukee. And then little by little, I just started doing art for them. And I started meeting different people in the tribe. So it's really just more of like a personal connection. And then when I started doing my Florida history blog, they would share information with me like, oh, you might like this story about so-and-so, an ancestor of mine, whatever. So they've been very generous with me about sharing their stories and histories and cultures. And in exchange, you know, that's why I'm very adamant about, like, if they need me to uplift their voices and uplift their causes, like, I'm always there for them.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's, we need more people who care about lifting their voices, because there's a lot of false narratives about the tribe out there.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, the tribe is doing, from a historic perspective, their TIPO office at the Seminole Tribe is doing a hell of a job, but you know, they need essentially more white people to say, hey, this narrative we've been sold is wrong. You know, these are not all runaway slaves and escaped Indians from other tribes. These people have always been here. And they actually did battle with the Smithsonian over that, about repatriation of artifacts, because the Smithsonian said, well, these are not your ancestors. They were before the Seminole were in Florida, and the Seminole fought them on it and won and got their their remains and their artifacts back. It's
right.
You know, it's a long history, and sadly, the federal government has a lot invested in keeping all of our tribes as separate as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's good to hear people doing that. You know, it's good that you're doing it, and the art is, you know, another venue too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was another way I got connected with them as well, is through art, is just going to the festivals. My grandmother always took us to the festivals and bought us. I love collecting the palmetto dolls and everything. So I just believe in the connectivity of art and culture and like shared history and everything. And it's just a beautiful thing. You know, I love the Seminole and Miccosukee people so much. They're some of the warmest, funniest people you'll ever want to meet. And I love their culture. Their history is so amazing. They're such resilient people, such innovative people. And it's an honor to be able to share their stories with people.
So I have a question for both of you, because it's something that I wonder about in terms of, because I love all things Florida, and I did a piece once that was kind of my reinterpretation of a Seminole doll. But for me as a white person, if I do something, you know, that's kind of my interpretation of a Seminole, would you consider that cultural appropriation, or do you think that's okay and appropriate?
I think it's fine line. You know, they're pretty cool. They're pretty chill people. I think if you don't try and pass it off as this is authentic Seminole art, like this, you just say like, this is inspired by it.
Yeah.
But you know, that they're very appreciative of that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, it's when you talk about cultural appropriation, I think it's when you try to take credit, like this was my idea. You know, like I came up with this, or I'm popularizing this. Like, you always want to give credit where credit is due. And that's the main thing. So as long as you're saying, you know, this is inspired by this culture, I'm not part of this culture, it's just inspired. I'm just inspired by this part of Florida's culture and history. I think it's, you know, it's, there's cultural appropriation and there's cultural appreciation.
Okay.
And cultural appreciation is always a good thing.
That what you think, Kathy?
You know, what I think is, I am not of Seminole or Miccosukee descent, and I'm not going to touch that. anytime I have a question like that, I do bring it to TIPO, because I have the people I talk to there, and they're probably the best representatives, because no one tribal member can speak for the whole tribe, just like one Floridian can't speak for all of Florida, or one Italian person can't speak for all Italians. So anytime I have a question like that, I bring it to TIPO and I bring it to them. But my questions are usually more historic. But I think that too, I wonder that about cultural appropriation. You know, there's a great, it's not a great book, it's a wonderful academic read called The Tree That Bends, that a woman named Patricia Rickman wrote about the Seminole tribe. She did ethnographies, and she assembled them into a book. And she has this beautiful piece that she wrote. It's probably the most interesting part of the book from a narrative perspective, where she said just because she immersed herself in the tribe and got to know these people did not make her want to adorn herself in turquoise, which would not have been appropriate for the Seminole tribe anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's more, I think, towards what Aubrey says, it's, there's a difference between appropriation and appreciation. As an example, I am fascinated by the idea of tiki, but tiki bars are the worst example of cultural appropriation.
Right.
Like anything I write that ever has tiki in it, it's always capitalized. And when I get questions, I'm like, well, that's like, if you want to put it in our terms, that would be like us talking about Adam and Eve and lowercasing Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a fine line. I mean, if you're going to do a minstrel style clay piece, yeah, Rick, I would say that's offensive, but I can't speak for any tribal member. And, you know, it's, I think you have a strong enough moral compass that you wouldn't do something that would be offensive, at least not intentionally. I appreciate that you think about it.
Yeah, you know, all that stuff, like we talked about the alligator last week and about how I'm inspired just by the, you know, the visual aspect of alligators, and you have them behind your head, actually. And
Oh
you
yeah, I
know
still have that up there, don't I, on my Zoom? You have to remember people can't see it.
that's right. Well, and you know, there's visual elements of the, you know, that are part of the history of the Seminole and Miccosukee piece that I find very, very attractive because it is, you know, it's really strong and graphic, and I love that and intrigued by it, and I don't know as much about it as you two, but it has informed some of the work I do, and I would like to know more and do more of it. But I have to admit I was a little fearful because, you know, it is like you said, the minstrel thing, that is so inappropriate, and I would never want to do that.
No, I know you wouldn't. I mean, that's not your style. Your
No.
style, I mean, I think you're culturally appropriating some manatee for your very honestly. You might want to talk to the International Association of Sea Cows about that.
Aubrey, what do you think about that?
Oh, well, about what? The manatees or
About you know, using the visual palette of different people throughout Florida, and you know, how, because that's kind of how I feel. It is. It's like manatees and alligators and some are all part of our, if we had this big palette of Florida, that's what it'd be like.
definitely. Like, I think it's a great thing to pay homage to the indigenous people. They really appreciate being seen. And again, like Kathy said, you can't speak for every person. I just know from my experience being friends with everybody and how they react to my art. They really, and I do run a lot of my pieces by them. First, I'll ask, what do you think about this? Is this hitting, whatever? But really, they like, I've straight up had them tell me, like, your art is medicine for us. Like, they love it. And I use Seminole Miccosukee phrases and everything. And it's, I don't, I always do it with the utmost respect, and they, again, they just really appreciate being seen. They're one of my biggest, patrons. Like, they buy all my t-shirts, they buy all my prints or whatever, like the Halapatachobi. They love that, the alligator. But you want to be careful because, again, you want to always make sure you're paying homage. You're not taking from their culture. You want to give credit where credit is due, and it is part of our shared culture. And there's just certain things too, like certain motifs that, yeah, they're important to Seminole and Miccosukee people, or were important to Colusas and Tamuqua, like the panther, the alligator, the manatee. And those are just kind of universal symbols that are important to Floridians of the past, present, and future. So, no, I think you can, no one has ownership of certain imagery either. So, yeah, I like Kathy said, the best thing to do if you have questions is always just ask, because they're always pretty open about, yeah, this is appropriate or this is not appropriate. But for the most part, I think really what people don't understand about them is, like, they want to be seen. They don't want to people to be culture vultures and pick their culture apart, and they do want to have some things kept private, but they're proud.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they certainly some spaces, like, I have the chapter about a Matoloye in my book, and I had initially wanted to get the tribe's permission to work with Tippo to do a whole history. And ultimately, what they came back with is the tribe wants to write their own. And I was immediately, yes, that's absolutely more appropriate. It's so much more appropriate. And I immediately backed off because I don't need to be the white person who explains Seminole history. I just thought that there should be such a book. And it shocked me when I, one of the times I was down there in the year plus where I was working on that chapter, and I was talking to two of the employees at TIPO, which is the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, and I, you know, I asked them about the single book I read in my graduate program about the Seminole Tribe of Florida, and I won't name it because what they said was, ah, yes, and they used this author's name. She tries very hard. And that is absolutely the worst. I never want somebody to say that about my writing, ever.
We do behind your back. We're always saying,
don't you dare.
Bless her heart. She tries really hard. Bless her heart.
Richard Adirondack Kilby, don't you dare. It made me so mad I had to make up a middle name for you. But I asked them what books, and they named a few. One of the books, I think, you know, some of them are more academic, The Tree That Bends, The Other War of 1812, which is just sets American history on its ear. But then they said that they see books get published about the tribe, and they've never even talked to the author. The author hasn't made contact. I know there's one contemporary author that I won't name who has a chapter in one of his books where he interviewed a person from the tribe, and it's kind of presented like, oh, this is what the tribe thinks. And that's egregious. That is not how that works. No one person can represent a whole group of people. You know, there's such a paucity of real information about the tribe outside of the tribe, but there is a preponderance of false information. I mean, I always, when I speak, I'm always very clear. I am not a tribal member. I do not speak for the tribe. I worked with the tribe very closely, and they did sign off on my chapter, and it took a long time. But you know, if you really want to know, don't ask me.
Uh-oh.
You want to what?
Did we lose her? I think
me?
We lost Aubrey.
Aubrey. Oh. Okay.
Well, sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I didn't see her slip away. One of the things I say when I speak is, you know, I'm not a tribal member. I don't speak for the tribe, but I did work with them closely. And I think that's a distinction that's missing in a lot of writings and work about the tribe. I could go on forever, and I will, but I will go on at the same time next week. Rick, do you remember who our guest is next week?
I never remember who our guests are from week to week. That's why I always text you the night before. Yay, Aubrey's back.
Hi, Aubrey.
Florida girl problem. My phone overheated. I was in my trailer. My phone overheated.
Okay. It is a very Florida problem to have.
Yeah, it's like the first time that's ever happened.
I forgot to turn the AC on, and I'm used to the heat. So like it was getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And I just didn't notice. And then my phone was like, oh, too hot.
In summer to be without AC, more power to you. You're a true Floridian.
I'm South Florida through and through. Like I call it my hot girl power hour. Like I will literally sit in my car in the parking lot with the AC off for like 20, 30 minutes and just bake. Like it's bad. I love the heat.
You're going to love menopause.
So much.
Menopause was made for you, Aubrey.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Anyway, before we go, our guest next week is your homework. If you are listening to this in real time and have a week to kill, our guest next week, your homework is if you have Hulu, go to Hulu and watch the TV show Mr. and Mrs. Murder.
Okay.
Because we are having Makeda Brotman on the podcast next week, and she wrote a book called Guilty Creatures. And it came out last year, and it's a true crime that happened in Tallahassee. And you kind of know where it's going from the beginning, but it's still just, it's this delightful, self-indulgent watch. And the book, Guilty Creatures, of course, if you can read a book in a week, please do so. But
right.
Those will be our guests next week. Listeners, make sure you prepare. There will be a quiz at the end of the podcast next week. I'm kidding. No, there won't. And before we go, Rick, guess what I'm going to do? Well, I'm going to thank our listeners.
Oh, Bets Boys Adventures.
Yes. Well, we have more than that. I'm going to thank all of our paid subscribers. And this is the point in the show where I ask you very nicely to go to floridaspectacular.buzzsprout.com and click the button that lets you support us. Anyway. Our listeners are John Bound, Ryan Worthington, Michael Gargalak, Natalie Zachrick, Angela Connolly, Davita Breyer, Leslie Hallway, Carol Miller, Elise Smith, Bets Boys Adventure, which is my favorite YouTube channel, Brian Woodall, Brad Sager, Elise Smith, Stephanie Hewley, and Craig and Celeste Welch, who go by the name Sulcata Grove. This month, I've been busy. You all got your postcards, but next month, we'll try and have something more interesting for you in the mail. But the postcards are interesting. Don't get me wrong. They were fun.
Maybe when Aubrey has stickers again, we can send our listeners stickers.
I will, for sure. The Resist stickers. They're still on your website. Are they not available?
No, I got to restock. I'm hoping to restock everything. It's like I said, it's a big investment, but I'm hoping soon with everything. And I'm also going to start a website soon. And hopefully get this thing to the next level so that I can really, start investing in more stickers, big poster prints, the whole nine yards.
Well, you've got a great following, and I hope all 54,000 of them listen to this podcast episode. That would be great.
For sure.
So thank you for being on the podcast, Aubrey.
Absolutely.
And Rick, as always, it's been a pleasure. And folks, I'm going to put a link. Rick, where should I link so people can see these things that you're creating? Because, you know, I joke about this manatee that you've culturally appropriated, and no one else can see it. Is it your Instagram people?
Yeah, the Lake Hourglass Studio on Instagram. That's where I put my art stuff.
And if you've listened all the way through, we do have the real name of the Florida's Other Histories Facebook page. It's called Submerged Stories, Florida's Other Histories. We'll put the link in the show notes. And if you are not listening to this somewhere where you can see the episode art, go find a way, because the episode art is going to be that billboard of Don Bailey. And he is awesome. Sexy, sexy beast.
For sure.
All right, folks, we will see you next time on the Florida Spectacular. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.